This show is brought to you by Gobble by Kevin Carr, a Thanksgiving novelette of the zombie apocalypse, and you thought your family dinner was stressful. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week's new movies include All I See Is You, American Assassin, Mother, or as they say on the poster, Mother, Patty Cakes, Against the Wall, Rat Film, and Menasha. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and the home cinema roundup featuring The Mummy. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I want to hit a piece of news that has been sort of cycling around for a couple weeks, and I finally want to just take a chance to strike this one head on. It's the deal with MoviePass. Now, if you're unfamiliar with MoviePass, it's a payment system where you like get a membership, and it used to be like $50, and it allows you to watch a movie a day. Now, even then, on that surface value, that's a steal. I mean, if you went and paid for 50 movies, even at half price, you'd still be looking at something like over $100 for movies. And while that was a good deal before, what they've done is they've brought that down to $10. And that's what caused theaters to freak out. Now, a lot of people are wondering how this actually works. How do they make money at this? Because $10 a month, that's less than the cost of a movie at some times, or a full-price regular theater movie. And there's really kind of no restrictions on it, too. So you can go see new movies. You don't have to wait until a matinee on a Wednesday or something. Part of the way the system works is, though some people have said that originally it was a gym membership type thing, they just assumed at $50, maybe people wouldn't, they go see two or three movies a month, and they'd actually make some money that way. But by bringing it down to such a low level, people are now worried, and theaters like AMC are freaking out about it. And I don't understand, or initially I didn't understand why AMC was freaking out about it. Because I'm like, they don't make their money off of movie passes anyways. They make their money off of concessions, and people who get free or cheap movies tend to spend more at the concession stand. Their worry at AMC is it's going to devalue movies. That suddenly, if it goes away, they're going to be like, well, I have to spend $10 per movie and then just stop going to the theater altogether. And I think that there's a certain worry there because movie theater audiences are slipping right now. And there's an interesting article on Business Insider that explains how this works and how this may not even be an attempt to make money. This just might be an attempt to get a huge subscription base that they can then mine your data. And so while you're only spending $10 a month, they can track all your data. They can track the movies you see and your demographic information and everything, and then sell that to Hollywood to target advertise to you. That seems very realistic. The problem is I don't know if that's going to be sustainable. This thing could implode in 2 years, or it could just be bought. Another company can come in and buy them and buy their data. And then they have all, and while they say, we're not going to sell your data, if another company buys the company, then that company owns the data. That's quite possibly what's going on. But in the meantime, you'll be able to get cheap movie tickets. Now, AMC has taken steps to basically block their type of passes. So we'll see if this thing goes anywhere. I think it's interesting that this may not even be designed to make money. This may just be designed to get your data, which is where the money really is in the internet. Another thing I want to kind of point out, and I've been talking about this last couple weeks, there have been the death of several horror icons. And with October coming up, I'm kind of doing this as a preview October show, a preview horror movie show. And I want to offer a couple suggestions for some of the horror masters that have passed recently and movies that you can watch that are not immediately tied to them. Like Tobe Hooper, who recently passed away. Everyone thinks of The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and they also think of Poltergeist. But there's a movie called The Funhouse, which apparently is a great movie. I've not seen it yet. I'm actually waiting until the 24-hour horror movie marathon in Columbus, Ohio at the Drexel Theater to see that because they're going to be showing that. I've never seen it. I always saw the VHS copy. Now, somebody like George Romero, a lot of people say, oh, you know, Night of the Living Dead is very obvious. But look at some of the Stephen King adaptations. Creepshow, which is also being shown at the 24-hour horror movie marathon, or The Dark Half. And then even something that's outside of that realm, The Crazies, which is very disturbing. take a look at Wes Craven. Everybody knows him for Nightmare on Elm Street. But some of his other movies, like Serpent in the Rainbow, is a fantastic zombie movie, a real authentic zombie movie of what zombies were before George Romero got involved. These sort of Haitian slave, mind-numbed, sort of half-dead creatures. That's a fantastic movie as well. And Cursed, which is just a lot of bloody fun, but if you're going to watch it, you got to watch the unrated version, which I believe is only available on DVD. It's a vintage copy, so you have to search for it, but it's a brilliantly bloody mess. Now, Christopher Lee, it's been a couple of years since he passed, but I think it's something to look into some of his work as well. And while I love the Hammer movies, and like one of my favorite little sort of gems out there that nobody remembers is like the Horror Express, which is from like 1972, also had Peter Cushing in it. But Christopher Lee, as you lead into Halloween month, think of Christopher Lee to set the mood and the atmosphere. I'm going to play here a couple bits from Christopher Lee as he narrates Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven.
The Raven. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door. Only this, and nothing more."
I first heard that on Recorded Books back in the 90s when I was driving home from college, and he has such a great voice, and that poem is so powerful if you hear it read. Poetry should be read aloud and heard rather than actually read on a page. It's one of those, it's like theater needs to be performed. And as much as I love, and in addition to The Raven, you've also got out there, both of these are on YouTube. Just search Christopher Lee and The Raven, or Christopher Lee and what's coming up next, The Nightmare Before Christmas. The original poem that Tim Burton wrote, which was the inspiration for the movie. Listen to Christopher Lee narrate it.
It was late one fall in Halloween land, and the air had quite a chill. Against the moon, a skeleton sat alone upon a hill. He was tall and thin, with a bat bow tie. Jack Skellington was his name. He was tired and bored in Halloween land. Everything was always the same.
Both of those I'm only playing excerpts because they're more than 10 minutes each, but search them on YouTube. Play them around the house at Halloween. They're fantastic. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Doing something a little bit different on the trailer park as well as we're getting ready for October. I want to play two of the movies I'm looking forward to most in the major theaters this October. The first one being Happy Death Day on October 13th.
Look, I know this isn't going to make any sense. I've already lived through this day. Somebody's going to kill me tonight.
Assuming that I believe any of this is even possible.
Sprinklers. Car alarm.
The way I see it, you have unlimited amount of lives. Unlimited opportunities to solve your own murder.
So I'm supposed to keep dying until I figure out who my killer is?
What's funny about this movie is I would have expected there to be another movie named this at some point. This seems like it would have been a great 80s slasher movie name. And this trailer actually looks kind of interesting. I mean, it's your basic time loop trailer. It's like Before I Fall or all these other time loop movies. But this is a horror movie and it looks kind of cool. I was actually watching it and my wife was watching it there in the room with me. And she's like, I'd watch that, which is odd because she doesn't like horror movies. So I'm looking forward to that one on October 13th in a month. There's also Jigsaw, which I played a couple weeks ago, but let's hear it again.
Any identification on the victim?
Puzzle piece.
But Jigsaw has been dead for 10 years.
It's not him. Can't be.
This was on the body.
The truth will set you free. I'm chasing a dead man.
Just running scared.
It's the copycat.
Live or die.
The choice is yours.
That one opens October 27th. This is your return to greatness with the Saw franchise. I'm very much looking forward to October. I love horror movies. I've already started watching some, and I'm going to go full steam ahead with scary movies in October. But before I do that, I got to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about All I See Is You, American Assassin, and Mother! Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's go right into the movie reviews. Well, let's go right into the movie previews, because I've been complaining for months that Hollywood is not showing us stuff, and we're getting a whole swath of movies this week that also Hollywood didn't show everybody. They showed some people, and these have been to film festivals, but I don't go to film festivals. I'm just sitting my fat butt in Ohio, sitting in the couch and in the movie theaters here. But they don't show these in advance sometimes. Some of them are because they're smaller company, like, you know, American Assassin and Mothers are both coming from smaller studios. All I See Is You. I don't even know if this is opening this weekend. I can't even find a confirmation. This thing, maybe it's opening somewhere. It was in Toronto last year, so it has reviews out there, but I couldn't even find a trailer for this. So I'm passing the trailer off on this one. All I See Is You. It's about a blind woman who's given her sight back, and she's played by Blake Lively. And her husband is played by Jason Clarke, who can look attractive in movies, but in this one, I don't think he does look very attractive. But this causes marital strife. So maybe this movie is opening, maybe they bumped it a couple, but they had a Batman vs. Superman trailer like 2 years before it opened, for crying out loud. This one's been to film festivals, I'm not sure. But anyways, this movie looks terrible. And the reason it looks, it's Mark Foster directed it. I've seen some of his movies are kind of bleh. World War Z, that's sort of like a popular movie I wasn't a big fan of, but he's done other movies like Stranger Than Fiction, or even did Quantum of Solace, which was a James Bond movie, which I enjoyed. But here, this is ridiculous. I mean, first of all, it's an absurd premise. Blake Lively's a gorgeous human being. I don't know what she's like as a person, and I don't think she's a really great actress. She does okay in some roles, but the fact that the blind woman is this drop-dead gorgeous woman already. And you even see her in a clip I found online, and she looks gorgeous. Even blind. I'm like, there was a movie called Jennifer 8 25 years ago, starred Uma Thurman as a blind woman. And Uma Thurman could look really beautiful. She was a model, but she could also look very plain. Well, she was a blind woman. She doesn't look at herself in the mirror and put on makeup. Why? Because she's blind. And my apologies to anybody I've offended who are blind or know people who are blind, but the idea of Blake Lively just being gorgeous and then seeing the world and saying, oh, my husband's kind of dumpy. Oh, hey, look, I'm gorgeous, movie just looks awful to me. So I'm just going to have to say, because I don't even know if they're showing it to anybody, but in my opinion, it gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about American Assassin, a Cold War vet and a black ops recruit uncover a plot to start a global conflict.
We got a problem. 6 days ago, 15 kilos of plutonium went missing.
Hey, look at this.
It can't be him.
It's him, Irene. It's Ghost.
Why is this guy after you? Something personal, sir?
Everything he did there, I taught him how to do it.
There's a nuke in play.
You got 48 hours
to stop him.
I trusted you.
This is one of those movies that has this long backstory, and if you actually watch the whole trailer, it feels like you're getting the whole movie. Because it gives this whole backstory to, I think it was his name, Dylan O'Brien. He was in Teen Wolf, but he was also in the Maze Runner movies. And he plays this hardcore special ops guy whose girlfriend was killed in a terrorist attack. And it gives this whole backstory. Like, half the trailer is his backstory. And then he goes and gets paired up with this Cold War veteran played by Michael Keaton, who's had kind of a resurgence in his career. What's funny is it's not even tied to the movie Birdman. It's tied to just some other things he's been doing, like Spotlight he was great in. And then, of course, he had the Spider-Man villain. Now, this movie looks, it looks like it's exciting and has some action to it, but it looks like one of those throwaway action thrillers. You remember a couple weeks ago I talked about that movie Unlocked with Noomi Rapace? And I said that was fun for what it is. That felt like a direct-to-video movie, and it kind of was. It was a very limited release. It didn't do terribly well in the theaters. But this feels like they're giving it a bigger push. This feels like, what was that movie with Jason Statham last year, The Mechanic 2 or something like that? These are kind of the kind of movies that feel like they're throwaway movies. Big surprise, coming out in September. Didn't screen this. This looks like it might be entertaining. This falls in the level of like The Cold Light of Day. Henry Cavill was in it, actually. And it was just a throwaway international action thriller. Then I actually saw it. I thought it was okay. It wasn't great, but it was okay. But it wasn't something you want to go pay $15 for in the theater. Now, maybe if you had MoviePass, you could not pay anything and just go see it as part of your program. That's the only way I would suggest to even try to check out a movie like American Assassin, be in the middle of September with no studio confidence behind it. So it gets a preemptive suck as well.
It sucks.
The last film I want to talk about is Mother, starring Jennifer Lawrence and Javier Bardem, playing a married couple who are confronted by intrusive and mysterious visitors.
He's a stranger. We're just gonna let him sleep in our house.
Did you know he had a wife?
They've come here to see me.
You're insane.
All I'm trying to do is bring life into this house. Open the door to new people, new ideas.
I'm so sorry.
You give and you give and you give.
It's just never enough.
This is directed by Darren Aronofsky. The problem is it's also not been screened widely. And again, I think that's because it's the middle of September. It's not quite award season yet, which should put you on defensive on this movie. Because here's the thing. I remember it was sort of like Tulip Fever a couple of weeks ago, where you're like, it's got a great cast. And it feels like this period piece that would do, and then it crashed and burned to the box office. This is this week's Tulip Fever, I think. If they really had confidence behind this as a potential award season favorite, they would have at the very least pushed it into October. It's a thriller, for crying out loud. This would have been a great type of thriller to go along with like The Girl on the Train or Gone Girl or even what they're trying to release with The Snowman. But by pulling it into September, you know, the week after it comes out, it seems like it's going to go into a diluted marketplace. And the thing with Darren Aronofsky is he's done some incredibly great work. And some of his movies have been somewhat accessible to the mainstream. Black Swan was bonkers and weird, but it was accessible to the mainstream. And Noah was an interesting movie, not a very good movie, but at the very least, I think the mainstream audience could wrap its head around it. But Mother, while it has a great punch of stars in it, I have a feeling it's going to get too convoluted to actually pay attention to. This is going to be like The Fountain without all the cool special effects. But I have a feeling that this one makes a great trailer and looks creepy, but I don't know if this is actually going to have any sort of real power behind it. This is a movie that probably should have been released later to be considered for award pieces. By this point, see, the way award films work is there's a very limited time for them to release award film movies. Now, sometimes you get movies that release earlier. A great example was The Grand Budapest Hotel, who a couple years ago actually won a whole ton of awards, but it was released in like July. And every now and then you get those weird movies that have been released earlier that kind of pop up later. And that happens. But generally, if it's an award film, it's released at the earliest October. An award film coming out in August or September. And I said this when Detroit came out. Already, have we forgotten about Detroit? Detroit was supposed to be the next big Oscar movie. It's forgotten about. That's what happens when you release them in August, because then you get this litany of other movies. And every now and then, you'll get a movie that'll show up again. Like last summer, we had was Hell or High Water. That one ended up kind of coming back and defeated the odds in being remembered. But usually, bigger award films, October at least, but usually November, even December. They're just shoving them out there so that they're the last thing you watch or they're still in your head. So yeah, I think Mother is going to be an interesting movie. Haven't seen it. Wasn't given an opportunity to see it. So it gets a preemptive suck, but I do kind of want to see it. I'll just wait for my screener in November.
It sucks.
That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be doing actual reviews of Patty Cakes and Against the Night.
Oppan Gangnam Style.
Gangnam Style. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the actual movie reviews. Movies I've seen that the studios have the stones to show me. Speaking of stones, I feel like I'm doing a Batman villain where Robin tries to figure out what the Riddler says. Stones are round and they're heavy like cakes and patty cakes. Let's talk about patty cakes. Holy rap battles, Batman. A heavyset white girl from New Jersey battles racial stigmas and body issues to launch her own rap career.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
I hope to still be working for you, sir.
Your pen game is ridiculous.
You have notebooks full of songs, Pete. How badly do you want this?
You don't have the musical bone in your body, and you sure as hell can't sing. What kind of music are we talking about here?
Been rapping.
Rapping.
Rhyming, I'm seeing, you know?
It's the Ritz Cracker, a go-hunt swagger. It's Viagra. I roll stone through Jersey like Jagger in a Jaguar.
I'm going to start out by saying I don't like rap. I have never liked rap. I was live when rap was coming up. I was a teenager. I was in the target market. I wouldn't say the target demographic. I was in the target demographic, if you want to talk about privileged white kids who started listening to rap in the 80s, but I was in the target market for somebody to like rap. It was of my generation. I have never liked rap. So it is a bit of a chore to get through the rap in this movie because they have a lot of it. It's a rap movie. It's about rap. And I've heard a lot of people compare this to 8 Mile. You know, I actually haven't seen 8 Mile. Because I don't like rap, I'm not seeking it out. I hear it's a great movie. But I've heard that this is very similar to it because in 8 Mile, it's him trying to break into, he's a white guy breaking into rap. Now, this is about a white girl who's heavy trying to break into rap. And her hype man is a big, tall, skinny Indian guy, like Indian from India. Also on her crew is this anarchist black guy who's got dreadlocks and like a milky lens and never talks, but does all this sort of like performance art. And then her grandmother, who's in a wheelchair, played by Kathy Moriarty, who talks like this, and they end up sampling her voice. You know, she sort of sounds like a cartoon character. This is how she talks. So, I mean, you talk about colorful characters in the cast. I mean, it's an interesting movie in the sense that they really kind of pulled out all stops for all the different characters. And in a way, it's very charming. Because even though it's all about rap, and it's all about that thug exterior, which I always find is kind of like stupid anyways. Again, I grew up in the suburbs, so I never had it to be street, because our streets were cul-de-sacs back then. So I was never in that subset of demographics where I really had to put on the game face just to not get stabbed at school. But there's a real heart to this movie. And while you kind of have to sit through some of the rap, it's actually an interesting, now it's not perfect. There are some real corny moments in this. Because there's a relationship with a woman and her mother. And by the way, the woman, Danielle McDonald, she is fantastic. Apparently she's like Australian. But she does a great job. She really can throw down the rhymes and she can throw down the beats. And she has that look and feel and presence of a girl from the streets. I can never talk about a rap movie, apparently, without sounding like an idiot. Without sounding like my dad using the term cool dude. He's almost 80. So for him to say, oh yeah, are you a cool dude? That just sounds so silly for him. That sounded silly for him when he was in his 40s in the 70s. But anyways, I mean, she does a fantastic job. She really kind of makes the movie about her and she does a great job. And there's a lot of heart to it. There is the heart of somebody trying to break into an industry which has so many barriers. And then there's even more barriers for who she is. Not just because she's white, but because she's heavy set. They call her Dumbo in the beginning. All there's just nonstop jokes about her weight. Now, some of the decisions they make, they're sometimes annoying decisions, but they do seem to be realistic for the characters that they are. They do sometimes torpedo their own success. And there is one particular moment where she has a chance to maybe try and make something bigger or through an alternative way. And the approach that they take to that is not unpredictable, but it's also pretty effective. And there's a lot of predictability in this movie. There really is. There's a lot of parts of this movie that you could have written as you started watching the movie and said, you know, write in a little envelope and then open the envelope at the end and say, see, I told you this was going to happen. It doesn't, it gets corny and it does some silly things, but overall it's got heart. And I have to say it's fun. And it's something that for somebody who doesn't like rap to get me into the movie like this, that means it's probably even better than it really is because I have to sit through stuff that I don't like. So in the end, I'm going to say that Patty Cakes kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Against the Night. A group of friends head to an abandoned prison on a ghost hunting adventure only to face an unexpected danger.
You want to film in a prison?
An abandoned prison.
What would we have to do?
Just going to take a few readings and then I'll interview you all later. 40 years ago, the warden of this place did biochemical research on inmates. There's 10 cell blocks. It's like a giant wheel. I'm going to put up all the cameras.
We're following an idiot.
It's amazing if this thing works.
We didn't know someone else was here.
This is a smaller, low-budget film, and it's coming out on VOD, on demand, right now. I believe it's getting some theatrical play as well around the country. And if you know anything about me in horror movies, the one genre or type of horror movie that has been a bane to my existence over the years has been found footage. Now, there have been some found footage horror movies that I've thought have been actually pretty good. Cloverfield, I thought, was pretty decent, kind of being one of the first big budget ones like that. I actually liked the original Blair Witch. I thought that was unique and different. I thought the original Paranormal Activity and like one of the sequels was actually okay. What I don't like are people that just use it as a gimmick. And I think by now, found footage has finally had its final death rattle. This is not a found footage movie, and I commend the director for not going down that route, because he could have. There's very little in this movie that you could not have shoehorned into a found footage movie. Now, it would have been awful and awkward and weird and stupid and annoying, but you could have done this as a found footage movie. But the fact that they didn't actually works to its advantage, because they use light and sound and shadow and suspense in a way you can't do with found footage. They shoot it like a traditional horror movie. Now, they sometimes will cut to the camera's POV. That's fine. I don't mind that. That's not found footage to me. Found footage is trying to tell the entire story on a single tape. And that usually annoys me, unless it's done extremely well, and that's a very rare thing. Now, this movie is a basic haunted house movie. They broke into a prison to do it. And some of the characters are annoying. It's this group of college friends, so not all of them are likable. And in particular, the guy who sort of orchestrates all this is almost so annoying, I wanted to turn it off in the first 20 minutes. But I persevered, and then I got to a decent movie. That is a struggle with horror movies. And it's in particular like slasher movies or high body count movies like this. At the very least, you got to have that one final girl that you like. You may not have liked all the other babysitters and teenagers in Halloween, but you got to like Laurie Strode. And you may not have liked all the other camp counselors in Friday the 13th, but you gotta like that last girl. This movie struggles with that, because even now, sort of like that final girl motif is, it's hard to like them and then surround them by people who you don't mind seeing get killed. This movie does struggle with that. But overall, it's effectively done. And the fact that it's not all found footage works. And it uses this creepy prison. I've been in an abandoned prison. I actually was in the movie Shawshank Redemption. And when they brought us all in, they housed us. This is before the place became kind of a history museum type place. It was back when it was just an abandoned prison. And they housed us in some classroom in the bottom of the prison. And on the way out one day, me and a couple other guys, we took a wrong turn and we ended up in the hallways. We ended up in the offices. And they bust us in, and the prison's way the heck out in the middle of nowhere, as you should with prisons, is keep them away from populated areas. And we're there in the office, and we're looking, and we're seeing people loading on the bus, and we're like, oh my God, we're going to be left here. We're going to be left here at this abandoned prison in the middle of the night. So we break open a window and climb out. So I guess you can say I broke out of prison once, even though it was an abandoned prison for Shawshank Redemption. But that's what this movie reminds me of. That is, I've been in the prison where they shot Shawshank, where it's been empty and where it's been deserted, and it's terrifying. So they do take advantage of the set and the atmosphere. So this does work. So overall, I'm going to actually say Against the Night kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Rat Film and Menasha, the weekly box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring The Mummy.
Stop it now.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Shirt, too sexy for my shirt, so sexy it hurts.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. The first film I want to talk about is Rat Film. This documentary takes a look at the lives of rats, as well as those who call them friends and those who want to exterminate them.
It ain't never been a rat problem in Baltimore. It's always been a people problem. And that ain't gonna change until you educate the people.
Before the world became the world, it was an egg. The rat nibbled the egg and let the light in. And the world began.
This is, again, one of the smaller movies. It's a documentary, and it is being released this week, I believe, in New York and Baltimore. And the reason it's in Baltimore is because it takes place in Baltimore. And actually, Baltimore is sort of the epicenter of how they look at the rat problem, because it looks at Baltimore historically, the slums and the segregated living conditions, and why the rat population took hold there so much. And a lot of that has to do with the hygiene and just upkeep of the area. And, there are holes in the walls and not proper plumbing and sewage was bad and there wasn't proper trash removal. And how over the years, there was a big debate about how many rats they should kill versus how much they should just try to improve the conditions. And the reality, this seems sort of like a no duh thing now, that the best thing to do is to improve the conditions, improve the infrastructure, have zoning requirements, and say you actually have to cover the holes in walls, and you have to have proper plumbing, and you have to have proper waste disposal, and have trash removal, and that sort of thing, because that breeds rats. Killing rats doesn't do anything. It's sort of like one of those bug zappers that you hang from your porch in the summertime. You can have that bug zapper going 24 hours a day, and it'll just kill a bunch of bugs, but it doesn't actually do anything about the population, because as you just get rid of the bugs, they breed more bugs. Any population will grow to fill its environment. Which is why in nicer areas that have proper hygiene and proper trash removal and proper drainage and proper sewage, you don't get the rat problem that you do that in the slums of Baltimore that you did in the early part of the 20th century. Now, it's an independent documentary, so it kind of takes a unique perspective and a unique approach. It's very avant-garde. It's got all this interesting way of presenting things, and it's got narration, and it's got weird music to it. And so at times it almost feels like an experimental film. And then it'll cut to these documentary moments, like where they follow these people that kill rats. Like this one guy who's just the city exterminator for Baltimore. There's another couple guys who just go out and try and kill alley rats. It's their way of keeping down the population. But the thing is, rats are pervasive species. And I was in Nassau, Bahamas, and I was on a cruise ship, and we were docked right up there next to the dock. Our balcony looked out over Senior Frogs, which is right there next to the straw market. And my wife went down to the dock, and it was night, and she left the ship, and she wanted to take pictures at night. And I could see these rats from the balcony of the cruise ship, which is like looking up from the 10th floor of a building. And these rats were like the size of a human foot. without including the tail. And they were loud and you'd hear them screeching and stuff. And I didn't tell my wife that she was that close to them until she came back up. But apparently rats are a big problem in Nassau because it's warm and it's easy to breed there. I've read that they just come right up on the bar at Senior Frogs on the outside of the building and they'll try and eat food there because people drop food all the time. So you're never going to get rid of rats. They're always a thing. But this is a fascinating look to how they breed and how they grow. And it's a weird movie and it's a weird documentary. And sometimes it's really disjointed and doesn't quite have focus. But it's still a bizarrely interesting movie. So I'm going to have to say that Rat Film kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Menasha. A Hasidic Jew in New York struggles to keep his son after his wife passes away, fighting against the Hasidic law that says there needs to be two parents to raise a child. Now, there's no trailer for this one because it's in Yiddish. Almost the entire movie is in Yiddish. There's a couple scenes where people speak English, but almost the entire movie is in Yiddish. So you wouldn't be able to understand the trailer. What I find fascinating about this movie isn't as much the story. I mean, the story is just about a guy trying to keep his kid. And dealing with the cultural and legal, and I'm saying legal because it's not like, New York law, but it's Hasidic law. Legal ramifications of a broken family. It's a kind of movie we've seen before in different elements and different perspectives. The thing that's kind of fascinating about it is because it is in that Hasidic Jewish community, which is very closed off. And to put this in perspective, when Sacha Baron Cohen was doing his movie, I was either Borat or Bruno, one of the two. And they had him go to all these different communities and sort of try and cause problems. And he said the only time he ever felt like he was really in danger was in the Hasidic Jewish community. They literally chased him out of there because he was trying to be kind of goofy and crazy. And he said that's the only time he actually really felt scared. I mean, he was in there talking to dictators and other lands, but he said, but that community is so closed off and so secretive, not secretive because they're doing something wrong. It's just they're a closed society. And this was apparently shot in secret, kind of guerrilla filmmaking. And so for when they're walking around on the outside of buildings and stuff, that's just sort of like them out in the world. But then they do a lot of the story inside buildings where they can kind of control the environment. Fascinating movie as sort of like pulling back the veil on the Hasidic Jewish community. But it's also an interesting, it's a sweet story because the Menasha character, he's really just a nice guy, but he's in a kind of a terrible situation and he doesn't know how to get out of it. So it's a charming story about a man and his son and the political and social and legal ramifications of him losing his wife. So I'm going to have to say Menasha kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Not a whole lot to talk about the box office. No big surprise with It last week. I do think it's going to top the box office again this week. 25 to 30 million. It's still going to be a hit. So don't worry, people. Scares are still coming as we lead into October. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I rushed through the box office because it's time to talk about the home cinema roundup. And I wanted to talk about The Mummy, the remake that they did this summer with Tom Cruise.
Whatever's in there has been safely hidden for 2,000 years. The hieroglyph said she was named Amunet, chosen to be Egypt's next queen. But her thirst for power led her down a darker path.
Because of your actions, this ancient power has returned. You are alive because you were chosen.
By what?
Evil.
It's been available on demand and on digital recently, but the Blu-ray is now available this week, and I had a chance to rewatch it. And I have to say, my opinion hasn't changed. It's not a terrible movie. As a mummy movie, it works. As an action movie, it works. And if you take it in perspective of comparing it to the Brandon Fraser movie that was made in 1999, it still works as a movie. And that movie made it a little bit more of an action-adventure film. This is kind of trying to be both. My biggest problem with this movie is Tom Cruise. It's not that Tom Cruise couldn't have been good in this movie. It's just Tom Cruise, I think, thinks he's making a movie that he would have made in the 90s. He's in his 50s, and he really should be in his 20s or 30s for this character. And part of it, the character is a dullard idiot. he's somebody who stumbles into this situation and he sort of lucks out of different things. And it becomes very central to Tom Cruise. And it's, he's trying to do this sort of smack talk, too cool for school kind of. It's sort of like when Will Smith kept trying to do his Fresh Prince character, like in Men in Black 3, where you're like, dude, you're in your 40s. Let's leave that behind and have a little bit of dignity. This is Tom Cruise still kind of living in the 90s, living in his 30s, hoping that he could be this big monster hit again. No pun intended. Now, without Tom Cruise, it's actually not a bad little movie. Sophia Boutella is fantastic as the mummy. I would watch a movie with her as the mummy the way the original mummy was, where Boris Karloff was both the bad guy and the good guy. I think she's fantastic. There's a lot about this movie I love. I love the whole bit with Russell Crowe and bringing in Henry Jekyll and setting up that dark universe and having this extended Universal Monsters characters. I love that idea. It's just Tom Cruise gets in the way. If they could just find a way to get rid of Tom Cruise or work around him or at least mitigate the character so he's not some wise-cracking 20-year-old, that isn't funny. But overall, I enjoyed it. And there's a ton of stuff on the Blu-ray. You've got deleted scenes. You've got, you know, behind-the-scenes stuff about doing the plane crash scene and the zero-G and Cruise in action, which is, of course, let's talk about how great Tom Cruise is. But yeah, you have Jekyll and Hyde stuff, choreography, as well as a commentary track featuring everybody but Tom Cruise. It's still an enjoyable movie. It's kind of worth checking out. I hope that they do more and better stuff with this Dark Universe series. I hope they don't kill it based on this. And even, it's been over 400 million worldwide, so it should be fine. So I'm going to have to say, overall, The Mummy and its features kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Other movies this week that are out on DVD and Blu-ray include Captain Underpants and It Comes at Night. That is it for this show. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Kingsman, The Gold Circle, and the Lego Ninjago movie. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.